Hi, and welcome to episode number 58 of the weekly Google Cloud Platform podcast. I am Francis Campoy, and I'm here with my colleague, Mark Mendel. Hey, Mark, how are you doing?
I'm very sleepy. You got me up very early this morning because you're in Europe.
I know. I'm in this beautiful place called Torrelles de Llobregat near Barcelona, working from home. It's like 4:20 p.m. here. So it was like 7 a.m. in San Francisco.
Yeah, it's like, you got me up. You got me up super early. So
yeah.
Thanks for that. I love you. Thank you so much.
I'm not even sorry. I'm actually not even sorry about that. I'm sorry about the topic of the podcast today.
You're not sorry. I mean, so nah. Today's topic is where Francesc spontaneously combusts because we're talking about Java.
Yay.
But we have a wonderful conversation about Java and Java on GCP with Ray Singh and Rajiv Dayal.
Yep.
You may recognize Ray from previous episodes as well.
Yep, such as many others, actually. I think that he did one with... the one I can remember is the one about Google Cloud Spin. Yeah, Google Cloud Spin. That was fun. But I think he's also been to another one. I do not remember now.
That's all right. And then at the end, we're going to have a discussion about moving data between cloud providers, specifically if you need to move data from S3 to cloud storage. Is there an easy way to do that? But before we do that, why don't we get stuck into our cool things of the week? Francesc, I know you found a bunch of really interesting ones.
Yeah, there's actually two of them that I'm very excited about because there are things that I'm actually going to do. The first one is a TensorFlow course. It's a crash course on deep learning with TensorFlow. It's 3 hours long and it doesn't require a PhD. That's what they say. So I'm pretty excited because I do not have one. So
I do not have a PhD either.
Yeah, so I'm very excited about going through it, learning a little bit more about all the details of TensorFlow and how to actually use it for something specific, like try to build something with it. I've been thinking about it for a while. And I think that's a perfect opportunity to try it.
Yeah, it looks like it's a video course. Is that right?
Yeah, it's actually a video course. It's, as I said, a bunch of hours, but it's definitely worth it. It's done by Martin Garner, one of our teammates, developer advocate for Google Cloud Platform in Paris.
Very, very cool. So speaking of teammates, one of our other developer advocate teammates, Amy Gidala, as she's on Twitter, has written a blog post about combining CloudML natural language API and running a Slack bot and how they can be integrated together.
Yeah, it is really cool because there's two things. I mean, there's bots and everybody likes bots, of course. But also, there is all the parts about CloudML. The natural language API is super powerful. I don't know if you've played a little bit with it.
A little bit.
Yeah, one of my favorite things is that you can it does entity recognition, which is basically you can say things like New York, and it's just like, yeah, New York. But you can also say the Big Apple, and it will say, yeah, New York. So it's actually able to understand all of these complex concepts and tie them together, which is very nice.
Yeah, what I thought was quite interesting about this too, so it does sentiment analysis in terms of like, are these positive comments or negative comments, and it can respond. But you can also do like topped entity listings, so you can start to see what the topics of conversation across time have been within the Slack channel, which I think is actually really, really cool.
Yeah. I will not get into the details on the Slack channel where she's talking because it seems like it's related to politics, which I try to avoid lately. Anyway, I think we have one more cool thing of the week, though.
Yeah, so we talked about this a little bit last week where we were talking about cloud audit logging so that you can determine like who does what and where and when and how on the Google Cloud Platform. But literally last week when we announced the blog at the same time, we announced the podcast, at the same time there was a blog put out explaining that we are significantly expanding a set of products that cloud audit logging is now integrated with, which is really cool. So it now works with Compute Engine, Container Engine, Dataproc, Deployment Manager, Cloud DNS, Key Management Service, Cloud Storage, and Cloud SQL. The above integrations are all in beta, but it does work across the board. So it's pretty sweet. And the article goes through how you can interact with the audit logs in Cloud Console, how you can interact with them in Stackdriver. You can do alerts, and it even talks about, if you're signed up for the alpha for Cloud Functions, how you can also use Cloud Functions to interact with your audit trails as well. So you can have automatic responses to certain actions that people take within your Google Cloud Platform project, which I think is pretty cool as well.
Nice. So yeah, I think that is important to remember to remind our listeners, just in case you're wondering, like, what is the difference between cloud auto logging and Google Cloud IAM? Because sometimes it might be a little bit confusing. The way I like to put it is, Cloud IAM says who's allowed to say to do what, and Cloud Audit Logging says who did what. So it's not if you're allowed or not. It's like, did you actually do it? So it's good for logging, like if you have something that people are allowed to do, but you want to make sure that they don't do it too often, or they have a reason behind it to do it, that is the product to use.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. All right. Well, I think that's probably enough for cool things of the week. I'm sure we could go on for a while. But why don't we go have a chat with Ray and Rajiv and talk about Java?
I don't want to. No, it's okay. Let's do that.
It sounds good. Today, we are joined by a teammate and also by an engineering manager. We are joined today by Ray Tsang and Rajiv Dayal. Ray, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good. And Rajiv, how are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you for asking.
Excellent. So before we get stuck into all the good things, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Rajiv, why don't you go first?
So I'm Rajiv, and I'm an engineering manager here at Google. I've been at Google for about 10 years or so, quite a while. And I'm right now managing teams that work on the Cloud SDK and Java on Google's cloud platform. So I'm really focused on cloud developer tools. Before that, I used to work on the Google Web Toolkit, or GWT, as it's now called. Some of you may remember that.
I remember that.
I used to use that long time ago, yeah. That is cool. What about you, Ray? Why don't you tell us a little bit about what do you do?
Sure. So I'm a developer advocate. I'm based in New York, and I focus a lot on the Java communities and Java developers and making sure that the experiences with Google Cloud Platform is the best for the community as well.
And if I'm not mistaken, it's your second episode with us?
That's right. Yes. This is my second episode. Thanks for having me back, given that the last episode, I don't know how well we did. I'm sorry.
It was awful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, but it was the Cloud Spin episode, which I had a lot of fun with. So I'm happy to be back again.
Awesome. We're very happy that you're back.
Excellent. All right. So we are having an episode about Java. We have talked about some other languages, so we figured it's good to come around to Java as well. So I guess I'll ask Rajiv, you know, like, why Java? Why is Java important to GCP? What's the story there?
Well, Java, you know, it's an important language. It's been, I guess, it was released in like mid-90s. And then since then, it's just become, you know, pretty much a staple language that's used everywhere. Honestly, it's used very heavily in enterprise. I think the language index, the Tyobi index, still shows Java as the most used, most heavily used language across the board for all sorts of applications. So, it's just it's a hugely important language, and it's also, I think one of the reasons for that is because it's just pretty versatile as well. It's one of those languages. Some people say, like, oh, you know, which is more expressive or it's too verbose. And some of those things may be true, but it's also shown that you can build like really large applications and services with it. You can have like really big code bases and they're still maintainable. So it's really important that, you know, we support Java developers and such workloads on GCP, especially as more enterprises are moving into the cloud.
Cool. So I know that one of the places where we talk about Java all the time on the cloud is App Engine. But
yes.
What other things are there in Google Cloud Platform that are related to Java? And what is the best places to run Java on Google Cloud Platform?
I'll take a stab at this, and then Ray can jump in. I think it really depends on what you're doing, right? So App Engine standard actually is like a good place to run Java if you really care about like very like sort of spiky traffic, very fast sort of like scale up and scale down. You want to have reactiveness to that, and you're okay with sort of being a little more constrained in what you do because you want the auto scaling to work for you. So that's a very good environment for Java, actually, because you don't have to think about the scaling. If you're working with containers, you know, Kubernetes, and then running it on GKE is obviously a great environment for that. This is basically hosted Kubernetes. So there you kind of have more control. You're working with containers, And, you know, Kubernetes, like, yeah, you can handle, especially if you're sort of breaking your application up into microservices, you can handle, like, pretty heavy traffic and whatnot. You can kind of do what you want there. And then, of course, you've got Google Compute Engine or GCE, and that's just a raw VM. So obviously, you can do what you want. It's just that all the setup is up to you. So there's lots of different places to run Java workloads on Google's cloud platform. It really depends on what you want to do.
And I believe you can also run like Java on some of our big data stuff as well, like Dataflow and some other tools.
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, the Dataflow, SDK is actually actually Java. It's actually Java, and so yeah, that's also really popular.
Excellent, Ray. I know there's some other places where Java is supported, not just to be able to just run your code, but other things like that. So like tooling and SDKs and IDEs and stuff. Ray, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So so actually, Rajiv and another engineer, team lead here. Who's not here today on the podcast, but Patrick, they actually develop all the toolings for Java. So we have really good tooling support for, if you're into the building tools. So for Maven and Gradle, we have plugins for those. For the IDEs, we also have IDEs integrations with Eclipse IntelliJ. So the idea there is for you to be able to, you know, start a project deploy, develop your applications and being able to deploy into some of those environments that Rajiv just mentioned seamlessly directly from the IDE. But also if you need to integrate with, say, a CI/CD platform of some sort or manage your own deployment, you can also do that from the command line, from your plugins as well, from the build tools.
And yeah, just to just adding on to that a little bit, so we've had in the past, you know, plugins for Eclipse, like the Google plugin for Eclipse, which has been there for a long time and is being used to support, GWT and actually App Engine for a long time. And we're actually building new, we've invested back in that, and we're building new Eclipse tooling that is just purely cloud focused, actually. So we're putting a lot more investment into Eclipse. And we'll expand that functionality as well to handle things like Dataflow, to make it a lot easier to work with Dataflow. There already is a plugin for Eclipse for Dataflow. We'll integrate those two together so it'll be in one package.
So I've also been seeing a lot of activity on the IntelliJ plugin as well. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Yeah. Actually, so that whole thing started with, with Android Studio. So Android Studio was released in, I think it was like 2013, it is built on the IntelliJ platform, as I think most people know now. And actually, we did cloud integration in there like a while back, actually. And the idea back then was, create an App Engine backend and use cloud endpoints to wire that up to your mobile application, with the thought being that, okay, you just want a simple backend and a way to talk to it with REST. Now we have other solutions like Firebase, which are better suited to that. But that's kind of what we started with. And then what we did was we basically spun that back out and improved it into just like a IntelliJ plugin for Community Edition and Ultimate, to be able to just like, if you're just a cloud developer, to be able to work with App Engine. And that's kind of be our basis. We're going to expand upon that and build more GCB features into that plugin. And, you know, it's timely because IntelliJ's popularity has really taken off like in the past 2 or 3 years. So like, we really need to have a good story in both IDEs because the community is split across both of them.
Yeah, I use IntelliJ a lot. I don't actually write any Java in it. I use it for everything else.
Yeah, I mean, I've that too, right? It's there. It's pretty good for almost every language it supports. They're very good. Yeah.
Cool. So since we talk about other languages, what about the other languages that run on the JVM? We've been talking mainly about Java, but what if I have a Scala application? Can I run Scala on? I mean, of course, I can run it on Google Compute Engine, but can I run it also on App Engine?
Yeah, I can take a stab at it. So for example, with App Engine Flex, you can basically run whatever you want. So it's not limited to, you know, pure Java or any certain languages that, you know, that it supports. But if you really want to, you can definitely just write it in whatever languages you wish to write in, including any of the other JVM languages. And just being able to, you know, package it up properly, or even just package it up into a Docker container. And as long as you are listening to the right ports and responding to the right health check points, endpoints, we will be able to serve those applications directly in App Engine Flexible as a pass. Now, of course, you can always, if you have the container, you can also always just run it in a Google Container Engine if you need fine control over your application. So you could do it either way.
Cool.
What about on standard? Is it a bit hacky? I have to ask. I'm curious.
if I
want to take my Clojure app and run it on App Engine standard, can I do that?
No, it depends. So does Clojure app, can you actually package it into a WAR file? Because you need to be able to deploy that into a Tomcat, a Jetty container at the moment. So for example, you cannot at the moment run any of the jar files if you have a self-executable jar. But if you can package up your app in a standard Jetty container, in a WAR file, then you may be able to run it. You should give it a try, Mark.
Yeah.
I'll take it for a spin.
If you do enough hackery, there's probably some way to get it going, right?
Yeah.
I bet you there is some way to get it going. Yeah.
And could you share if there's any actual plans on doing more about these languages? Like, for instance, we recently had someone new in our team that Guillaume Laforge, he created Groovy. What about Groovy? On App Engine standard, I'm talking about.
That's a good question, actually. I think there isn't anything directly in the pipeline that I know about to support that, but I do know they're working this sounds kind of weird, to make the App Engine standard environment slightly more flexible, so that you could basically have less, you're still running Java, you're kind of in a JVM, but there's fewer restrictions. So in a world like that, I could see more of that being possible, but I couldn't concretely say yet, honestly.
Cool.
It's fair.
So I have a question. As some of you might know, I don't write Java that often. I'm more of a Go person. No, it's shocking. That's okay. One of the things that I've heard about is that, you know, like when you create microservices in Java, it's not really a microservice because the JVM is so big. Is that actually a problem? Like if... I'm sincerely asking the question. It's like, for instance, if you have on GKE... is a container going to take longer to start because of the JVM being large, or is there any of those issues that people that are running Java should take?
As far as microservices is concerned, right, the actual code that you write in Java, given the recent framework developments like Spring Boot and many, many others, you actually write very few code to achieve a lot, because of all the common, you know, tasks that these frameworks will be able to take care of you, for you. And so the code that you write is actually quite small. You can really focus on the business problem that you need to solve. In the end, the end package, the actual, you know, binary file that you compile is also very small. So the JVM is really there for you, you know, to support the runtime environment. Now with Docker containers, of course, there's the concept of layering. So you can layer the JVM image underneath of your app so that you don't have to, say, redeploy hundreds of megabytes of JVM every single time. So the actual app that you deploy could be as small as the code that you actually just changed. And that is a powerful concept because that will then give you a very rapid deployment across all of the servers that you have. So you don't have to really manage which version of JVM should be running, because all of that will be encapsulated in one of the image layers that you depend on. And the startup time is actually quite fast. Cool. I mean, these apps can start in seconds, to be honest. So that shouldn't be much of an issue.
Nice.
Cool. Nice segue, I think. You mentioned Spring there. I know we've also talked about Jetty and a couple of things. Like, if I'm a Java developer and I'm going back to a while when I used to live a lot in the JVM, are there particular frameworks or as you were talking about Jetty, things like basically runtime environments, I guess, that are better supported than others? Like, so if I'm coming to GCP and I want to write a Java app, should I be looking at particular frameworks or particular runtimes to get my app running so I can run it on the web, if that makes sense?
So at the very basic of it is, you know, the GE standards with the servlet. So that's definitely supported, right? So even today, since App Engine standard, GE spec has been supported in a way. So you can write a servlet, you can serve your JSPs, very standard Java stuff. In Flex, right, you can run even more, basically removing some of the traditional App Engine standard sandbox restrictions. You can run basically whatever framework that you want to run. But Rajiv, you want to add to that?
I think you covered it well. I guess what I would add is there is a bunch of work that is in progress, so it isn't there yet, because to integrate more of these frameworks with GCP. So for example, in Spring, there's things like Spring Cloud Stream, and we want to integrate that in with our Cloud Pub Sub, right? So that you have a nice integration there. You could wire it up yourself if you wanted to, but that's obviously a bunch of work, and we want to have something like that ready for you when you come to the platform. Another example is, so we have the Stackdriver diagnostics platform that's part of GCP. So, you know, this gives you information on your application as it runs. You know, you have like you have stats, you see like traces and whatnot, and you see like, you know, logging, error reporting. We want to wire that into what Spring also has in that vein, like Spring Actuator and whatnot as well, so that like basically you can get that for free as opposed to having to wire all of that up yourself. So these are integrations that we're currently working on right now. They don't exist yet, but we want to make it a much better experience when you come to our platform with Spring, and you just get a lot more for free.
Cool. Since we're talking about stuff that's coming, is there anything else you want to talk about that might be in the pipeline that Java developers might be excited about?
So one thing that I want to mention is something that actually just came out, I think, before the New Year's. It is our Zipkin connector. So if anyone who's interested in developing microservices in general, a lot of it, you know, you might need to be able to trace the calls across multiple services. And like in the Java world, a lot of it is using Zipkin, and you can tie it up with Spring Boot if you want to. So rather than maintaining, say, your own Zipkin server, there's actually a proxy now that can take in Zipkin requests. That's, you know, for the tracing, and then you can forward the trace information directly into Cloud Stackdriver Trace. So what that means is you have less to maintain, and you don't have to change your code in order to be able to trace your application. So you can browse all the trace information directly from the GCP console.
Another cool thing. It isn't. Super new, but I don't know how well known it is the Cloud Debugger, actually. So this is a pretty cool piece of technology. It's actually a what you might call like a postmortem debugger, or it's a production debugger. So, you know, when you set a breakpoint, you're not actually stopping execution. What you're actually doing is you're saying that, okay, you want to take a sample or trace of like some of the requests and the sort of a snapshot of the stack at that point in time, so that you can come back later and you can sort of view like, okay, you know, when I hit this breakpoint, what was going on at this time? And this is pretty cool, because normally you can't use this type of feature in production, because you would halt execution and then no one can go to your site, and that's no good, right? But what we've done here is now, like, you know, you can even set conditional breakpoints. So like on a certain condition, you trip this, and then you can be like, oh, what happened here? Like, this was hit. Like, why was it hit? Let me walk through. And we've actually wired integration into IntelliJ, so you can actually walk through the stack and look at the stuff as you would just in a normal debugger. So you're not actually breaking execution, but at least you have a familiar interface into that. And they've recently added a new feature. I think it's in the web UI. We haven't entered the IDE yet, which is called like dynamic log points. So, you know, how many times you had like where you want to know more information because something's going wrong in production, and you're like, oh, geez, I wish I had added that log statement. And then you go, you add the log statement, you rebuild, you whatever, you redeploy, hours go by, and then you see the log, and you're like, oh, wow, I wish I had even more log info, and you do that again, right? With dynamic logs, you actually can set at a point in the code that's in production on a source line and say, like, I want to print this information, these variables, and actually it actually sets that dynamically, like in the bytecode. So without having to redeploy or anything, you actually can set a logging statement in there, and then you'll start seeing the logging statements as they're hit. So that's like a really powerful feature to sort of like figure out what's going on in production without like, and saving you probably like hours or, I don't know, days of like redeploying with like more logs and more logs and more logs. So that's a really cool feature.
Yeah, as a gopher, that makes me super jealous. That is super cool.
One day, you guys will get there.
So I feel like we should definitely, you know, take a stab or take a look at the elephant in the room. Java 8, I believe that's, what state's that in? How's that going?
Java 8, that's a good question. That's a very good question. So Java 8, actually, works quite well on App Engine Flex. If you're the App Engine Flex environment, we have supported runtimes for Java 8 or OpenJDK, like 8 and plus Jetty 9 or just OpenJDK 8. And obviously you're like, what are you doing on standard? Why isn't it there? And you're right. Well, that's actually in the pipeline. Like, we can't promise an exact date yet, but it's actively being worked on. And, you know, like, it's looking very promising. So this is something that's top of mind for us.
Cool. So I just wanted to add one funny thing. When you said the elephant in the room, I thought about Hadoop. But anyway. So
different elephant.
Yeah.
It's a lot of elephants. Elephant. Yeah.
So I guess we're kind of running out of time, but is there any other topic that you'd like to discuss or something that we might have missed, Ray?
No, I think I'm okay here. But one thing, Francesc, when are you going to try Java again? Just wondering.
When it has support for Go routines, you can call them Java routines if you want to.
You can have Go routines in alternative JVM languages.
In alternative, like, yeah. Actually, I'm thinking about learning Clojure. So,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's like Java, just better. Just kidding. I'm not a troll. Just kidding.
Yeah, we're basically going to keep investing in Java as much as we can until you switch over to Java. So, you know, we're full steam ahead. Going to get you off of Go.
You know what? And that's an incentive for you never to touch Java. So
right.
It always gets better.
We're going
to
be working hard over here. Yeah.
I'm an important part of the Java community by not being part of it.
Exactly.
Exactly. What about you, Rajiv? Is there any topic that you'd like to
add? No, I think we covered everything pretty well. This was great. I guess all I would add to it is that, yeah, like, we're really serious about Java and we're putting a lot of resources and investment behind it because there's just so much we can do to make it better for Java developers on GCP. There's just tons we can do, so we're putting a lot of attention there.
Excellent. And I know either one or both of you, are you going to be at particular events coming up as well?
Yeah. So I do try to go to plenty of Java-related events and Java user groups. So I'm going to be traveling quite a bit around. One of the first stops is going to be JFocus in Sweden in February. So I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, if you do see me on the road or if you want to chat, I would love to, you know, learn about, you know, your experiences and how you want to use the platform and, provide any of the feedback to us. Love to get it also back to the engineering teams as well to make our experience better and so that developers will love to use.
And right after that, I think we're going to meet at Fosdem.
Yeah, I will see you at Fosdem. No, actually, Fosdem comes before that. So I'm going to be in Fosdem for the weekend and then go straight to Sweden right after that. Yeah, and there's also the DevOps US that's going to be their first DevOps in the United States. So I'm going to be there with many, many other people as well, including Guillaume LaForge and many of the engineers. We're going to be there. So looking forward to meeting everyone in DevOps US too. Yeah.
Very cool.
Excellent. Well, to both of you, thank you so much for joining us. It has been a pleasure and a delight talking to both of you.
Thank you. Likewise.
This was great. Thanks so much.
So thanks again to Ray and Rajiv for taking the time and making me discover that actually Java is a very interesting language with a vibrant community.
Yeah, no, it was a really good interview. Obviously, Java is very much alive and well.
Now, yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, I used to use the JVM a lot, so it's a warm spot in my heart for it. And so it's great to see all the stuff that's going on there.
No, I like to joke about it, but I know it is a very interesting language because, you know, like, there's basically half of the internet that is built on it. So it's good to have it and have a good place to run it, like Google Cloud Platform. Anyway, I think it's time to go with our question of the week.
So we had a really interesting question this week, I think, in terms of, say, you have a whole bunch of data on Amazon S3, for example, and you want to transfer data to Google Cloud Storage. Is there an easy way of doing that?
Very interesting question, but I actually have a pre question for that, which is, do you know what S3 stands for?
I do not know what S3 stands for. What does S3 stand for?
I'm almost sure it's Simple Storage Service, but I'm not completely sure, but I think so, which, you know, it's kind of a cool name, but yeah, everybody calls it S3 and then it's like, what? Anyway, so yeah, how do you transform it from AWS S3? How do you move that data to Google Cloud Storage? I actually do not know.
So it is interesting. So we do have a GSUtil command line tool for working with cloud storage. You can use the GSUtil GS Util Utility, that sounds redundant, the GS Util tool to work with Amazon S3 buckets as well. However, the most efficient way of doing things is we do have this thing called a cloud storage transfer service, which is specifically set up for transferring data from one cloud storage provider to another, which is kind of cool. Obviously, you're going to have network costs from moving from one to the other, so that, keep that in mind. But you're able to set it up so that you have like basically sources and sinks. So like, where do you want it to go from? Where do you want it to go to? And then you can kind of set it up to happen like periodically or maybe just once off. There's a programmatic interface. There's you can go through the console UI, you know, and there's a series of REST APIs as well. So you can really kind of pick and choose how you want it to work. But it is a nice and easy way of just transferring that data across if you need to do that between different cloud providers.
Cool. That sounds indeed very useful. I don't know how often that kind of things are needed to be done, but if you're thinking about starting to try a Google Cloud Platform and, you know, it's like you need to pass all your data around, it's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's kind of cool. It's one of those things that you really need it when you need it, but if you don't need it, then you don't. Like, it's one or other.
Yeah.
But if you don't know it exists, then it could be really painful to pull everything down, say, locally, like via GSUtil, and then push it back up again into the cloud, whereas you'd much rather run it over the big fat pipes that usually run between all our big data centers.
And if you need to do syncing in between AWS and GCP, I think that there's a thing that I should mention because, you know, it's a tool written in Go and it's open source. It's called Minio. And they're really cool because, you know, they're reading Go. So, of course, it's a cool tool. But check it out. It actually supports a bunch of different services, storage services from different clouds. So there's S3, but also there's Google Cloud Storage. They have their own Minio server. It also supports OpenStack Swift. So it's definitely worth having a look if what you need is a little bit more complex than just passing from one side to the other ones.
Excellent. Well, Francesc, before we run off today, I think we should remind people how to get in contact with us so they can send us emails and cool things of the week and questions of the week and all sorts of other good stuff.
Yes, because we haven't done that yet in 2017. So you say the things, I say the places.
Okay, so we'll start with, okay, if they want to go to our domain name, where can they go?
That is gcppodcast.com or cloud.google.com/podcast.
If they want to email us, where should they do that?
They should send an email to hello@gcppodcast.com.
If they want to find us on Reddit?
It is r/gcppodcast.
If they want to find us on Google Plus?
Plus gcppodcast.
And if they want to find us on Twitter?
@gcppodcast.
And last but not least...
There's a theme going on.
There's a theme, definitely a theme. And finally, if they want to find us on Slack, where can they find us?
That is the hard one. On Slack, there's a podcast channel inside of the Google Cloud Platform community that you can join by going somewhere.
bit.ly/gcp-slack.
Cool. We'll have all of those just in case people are wondering. They're all in the webpage anyway, so just go check it out at gcppodcast.com. Okay, so before we go, I guess it's time to ask, what are you going to be next week? Actually, where are you now? You're in San Francisco. I'm in Barcelona. What are your plans afterwards?
So I'll be at GDC, the Game Developer Conference here in San Francisco. We're sponsoring a bunch of events going on. So we are sponsoring Women in Games. If anyone's going to be at that party, we'll be there. We're sponsoring Blackington Games as well. So if anyone's going to be there, come and say hello. We'll be around. I think if you're looking for us, we'll definitely be hanging out by the Improbable booth because they're a partner of ours. We have a developer day. There's a Google Developer Day on Tuesday and a sponsored session. I'll be there talking about basically running dedicated game servers in the cloud, mainly on Kubernetes, actually, both in my Lightning talk and in our sponsored session on Wednesday morning as well. And then they'll be next.
Yes, cloud next. That's going to be fun. That sounds like a lot of things going on for you, but sounds fun. Yeah, lots of parties.
It's all around GDC. Yeah,
very
GDC
cool.
GDC is going to be crazy. And I know you're up to a bunch of stuff while you're wandering around Europe.
Yes, I'm actually kind of doing a European tour because, you know, I like the cold weather. I'm currently in Barcelona because I will be speaking at the Go meetup on Thursday, tomorrow. And then the week after that, I will be in Paris, where I'm trying to organize also a meetup, but it's not completely sure. But that weekend will be in Fosdam in Brussels. And we have a Go dev room. So you get, if you're around, come say hi. I think we still have time. We still have place for Lightning Talk. So if there's anyone around there visiting, they want to give a Lightning Talk about Go, let me know. And after that, yeah, I'll be coming back for Go SF. We're going to celebrate that Go 1.8 is coming out. And the week after that, GopherCon India. So yeah, traveling a little bit around the world. And that is before Cloud Next. So it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, yeah. You're presenting at Cloud Next as well?
Yes, I'm presenting at Cloud Next. I'm going to be talking about Google Cloud Endpoints.
Very cool. I'll be on stage as well, talking with our gaming partner Improbable about massively large persistent online worlds.
That sounds very interesting. That sounds kind of like a little bit like Pokemon Go, massively online worlds.
Yeah, this is more in the MMO kind of realm, very large online simulations.
That sounds pretty cool.
It's very interesting stuff, actually. It is pretty cool. Awesome. Well, Francesc, thanks so much for joining me yet again this week.
Thank you so much, Mark, for waking up so early. And thank you all for listening.
Yeah, and talk to you all next week.